Think for a moment of the public library. Ah, quiet stacks, studious patrons, little old librarians with their salt and pepper hair pulled back in a tight bun, shushing their way through the Dewey Decimal System. At least that's my vision of the library. Well, wake up, folks. Today's librarians aren't just organizing books. They're fighting crime. They're containing chaos. They're acting as police officers,
Are they part of the Justice
babysitters.
League?
They are. You know, if when you think about it, they have to deal with all the chaos of a public space in a tightly bound set of library stacks. They're social workers. They're fine enforcers. We have with us librarian Dan Borchert, and he takes us inside this crazy world in his new memoir, Free for All, Oddballs, Geeks, and Gangstas. That's Gangstas in the Public Library. He joins us now from suburban Los Angeles. Hey, Dan.
Hey, Don.
Don, sorry about
That's
that.
okay.
So what does the library look and sound like when school lets out? You described this chaos.
Well, it's very civilized during the day. Before 3 o'clock, it's just a place you'd want to go. But around 3 o'clock, we tell our older patrons, you know, maybe it's time to go. It's almost the witching hour. After 3 o'clock, the doors burst open, and up to 120 kids will come in, and we are there. There may be four adults in charge of them all.
Now, what happens here? I mean, are parents thinking that this is just free daycare?
I think they don't think about it too much, but yes, it's free. It's pretty much free daycare, and the library gets used. We're happy the kids come in. A lot of times they stumble on a book and accidentally read one, and that's a good thing. A lot of the kids are good kids, and they're there to study. But there is an element where it's just, you know, we're free, we're air conditioned, we're open, we're welcoming, and it's cheaper than and less they're less apprehensive than having them at home by themselves.
Well, this is a theme that runs through your book. I mean, obviously, you are a librarian. You work with librarians. They want to help people. They believe in the healing power of a book. And yet, because you have free and open doors and the world is what it is, it just attracts a lot of people who, if not want to abuse the system, to at least bend the rules a little bit.
Right.
And so you tell these stories about, some just horrible stories. You talk about something, you know which one I'm talking about. There's something very nasty when you have to put on gloves and clean out the book drop. We'll call it a used sexual aid. Yes.
That happened in my first year at the library. One of the pages was assigned to take me around and show me all the ins and outs, and here's where we keep the key to the restroom, and here's where we hide the key to the thermostat. And one of the things she was instructed to do is to show me, well, what do we do in the morning? We put up the flag. We unlock the flag because it's locked up there. The kids will haul it down and play with it. We empty the book drop. So one morning we went out to empty the book drop.
Keep it clean, Don.
Pardon?
I said keep it clean.
Oh, yeah.
Family show.
I've got that on a notepad in front of me. But we opened up the book drop, and this horrible, horrible smell wafted out, and we kind of thought that maybe a possum had crawled in and died. But it was a rigorously used sex toy.
Oh,
that, you can say that, I guess.
I think you can. You don't want to think about it, but you can say it.
It was, and we were both stunned. And because I was new to the library, nothing like that had ever happened to me. I said, well, we should call the police. This has got to be a crime. And we called the police, and they did show up, but they, in their attitude, and rightfully so, is like, well, what should we do? What would you like us to do? And I kind of thought, well, maybe they should dust it for prints. And they were like, no, thanks.
I bet they were.
You know, here in New York, they actually lock the book drops. And it never occurred to me. I'm like, that defeats the purpose of a book drop to keep it behind bars. And now I think I understand.
Well, instead of a book drop, we had a slot that actually went inside the library, but people were lighting things on fire and then dropping them inside, hoping to set the library on fire.
Well, speaking of crimes and misdemeanors, there was even a drug ring operating out of your public bathroom for a while. How did that work?
Well, it worked profitably for months. We had two guys come in the morning, and they would this is what we found out afterward. They would read the funnies. They would wander around for a while, catch up on the news, and they would put an old burlap or some kind of sack in the trash can out front. And then after about a half hour, they'd go out to the sack, and somebody would put money in it. Then they'd come back into the library, go into the men's restroom where they had secreted behind the ventilation duct a big stash of drugs, and then they would take out the appropriate amount of drugs and then take it and put it into the burlap sack or knapsack, and then that was the end of the transaction. And they did that day after day until the police came in and arrested them.
Now, we should make this clear. It's not like you just have a bad branch. Is that right? I mean, you've talked with other librarians here, right?
As a matter of fact, if you go online to a library, like there's many librarian blogs where this kind of thing happens happens with regularity throughout libraries in the United States. But just not, I mean, it's not like you go in there and it's a hotbed of activity day after day. This happens with regularity, but not too often.
Well, you know, it does seem, reading your book, that there is something about a public library that seems to attract obsessives and some criminals, sociopaths, people with mental issues that they want to play out. Why is that?
I think it's because that the library, at its best, is a welcoming place. There are no requirements to walk in the door. We don't judge. I mean, there are procedures set up so homeless can get library cards, even though they have no fixed address. First generation immigrants are welcome to better themselves and learn the language. So so anything that's that welcoming will attract.
But at the same time, there are limits. I didn't know that librarians could be pushed past their limits. But time and time again in your book, you talk about even quiet, shushing librarians who lose their marbles. And you yourself almost came to blows with a patron. I mean, you're kind of the enforcer at this library.
At my branch, for many years, I was the only one that had children. And so I didn't try to bond with the kids as a peer, because I thought that's madness. That's, you know, you're playing into their hands. So I came at them as a parental authority. I would say, like, knock off the noise or take it outside. I tried not to get emotional about it, but I wasn't trying to be their pal. But we did have several instances where, it doesn't happen too often, but we'll have patrons that actually will come in and want to fight.
Well, you know, listen, you admit in your book that you came to this because you thought it was a cushy civil service job. You never went to
did
get
I
your
library.
Kind of. And you never went to get your library degree.
Right.
And you have all of these issues you face. But quickly, like, you do seem to actually love this job.
I actually do. As a matter of fact, I've been offered laterals or promotions to other branches, but I really enjoy the branch I'm at, just because there's one group of patrons that come in during the day, and I mention them in the book. We have one woman that brings us baked goods. I mean, yeah, that's very old school, and we have people that know our names, and it's community.
Sounds great.
And then at 3 o'clock, from 3 to about 6, it's just like a hockey game. So you can't get too comfortable in any one position. There's always something going on in my branch.
Well, Don Borchert is a hockey referee and librarian in suburban Los Angeles, and author of the book Free for All: Oddballs, Geeks, and Gangsters in the Public Library. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Hey Hey, as you know, we are more than a radio show here at the Bryant Park Project. We're also an online experience. If you go to our blog, npr.org, you know that, /Bryant Park. Laura Conaway is our online editor, and you want to tell some of the goodies at the blog these days?
Yeah, we have actually what I consider one of the special treats of working here, just every so often you come around the corner and you hear some wonderful music that you can't hear anywhere else, and it's being played live for you, and that happened here yesterday with the group Tegan and Sarah out of Canada, and we're actually going to, they're going to be on the show, I think, a little later in the week, but we're going to give you guys an early taste of a track they did for us yesterday called 19. It's pretty sweet. It's on video. It'll be on the blog later.
All right. Also, we have our own Bryant Park dollar, a la the Liberty dollar. That's this.
We haven't showed it to you yet.
No,
but,
it's pretty spectacular.
Later in the show,
the
we'll
Liberty
debut
dollar,
it.
Yeah, it was this sense of currency which got raided by the feds. They had this place in Evans, in Illinois. They created their own currency. So we have our own.
Yes, for us that was kind of a red flag saying go. So we have one. It features, we have a coin that features you, Allison, and then we have another one that features outgoing President Luke Burbank.
Yeah, that's a collector's item now.
I see.
I don't think you could take the subway with it, really, but there they are.
And finally, we've got just a short time left. A lot of comments about "Wish I Was White," that song by Alan Watty.
Yeah, I'll just read the shorter of them, actually. This, we posted the song and said, what do you think about it? And people said, I hate this. Truly, I do. Please take this song down. It says that blacks are totally dependent on whites for our success and that anyone other than blacks can help. I don't hear any Asians singing about being white nor any whites wishing they were black. Come on, Alan Watty. This was a poor way to shine the light on a lackluster singing career rather than a conscious message directed towards race equality.
Our online editor, Laura Conaway, reading some of the comments from our blog. You can join the conversation anytime, npr.org/Bryant Park. We're back in about 90 seconds.